1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Mark your calendars for Colonial Downs' signature event, the Grade 3 Virginia Derby, on Tuesday, August 31st. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs now running Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday afternoons at 1:45 p.m.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, second half, about 8 minutes in, and I knew I was going to have a nice, 9:20 to 10 o'clock with Sean Clancy, but when you got him in that gregarious mood, and obviously he's excited and nervous about Gibraltaro later to start the day, 105 post for the AP, Patty Smithwick, the first of the two grade ones, and Sean, I just enjoy his perspective. He's got such a vivid appreciation for the game, the game's history, the environments, and the people involved. Going to have Seth join us here in a little bit. He's sitting across, and we'll fold Seth in a little bit after we talk to Dick Powell. And Dick's been kind enough to stand by. Dick, sorry to keep you on hold like that.
That's all right. I'm sitting in my car in a parking lot at a golf course where took my grandson over to take a lesson because I'm incapable of giving golf advice. So he's getting professional advice from someone, and I'm sitting in the car.
All right. So you listened to at least a part of what we did with Sean?
Yes.
Well,
the only thing I would not correct, but he kept saying riders up here, but he was referring from riders from New York City market.
Yes, he was. Yeah, no doubt.
So it wasn't upstate Saratoga riders. It was people that cover racing for other markets up here.
Well, and I did fold in a little bit that there has been misguided treatment from, not necessarily from beat writers up here, quote unquote, but certainly the papers. I've been a vocal critic. The papers, most notably the Times Union, that has inexplicably gone out of its way to attack Naira for, in some cases, incredibly petty or incredibly, misinterpreted elements of, the operation of the racetracks and of the business. It goes even beyond that. I mean, you and I very much have discussed the history of the franchise renewal and, the mischaracterization of elements that the upstate and downstate press engaged in.
Yep.
was disgusting. Yep. I mean, Seth sitting with me, Seth and I discussed it on television quite a bit at the time, and Seth brought up the very germane question: is if you know the ins and outs, the intimate details of a certain circumstance, and you recognize that the media is mischaracterizing that particular topic, doesn't it make you wonder about how they're interpreting other topics? I remember Seth, you brought this up one time when we were in the studio downstate, and you said it just is unsettling to think that what other topics are being mispresented to us, by the outlets in question. And it's a fair question.
Yeah, if they're getting one thing wrong, then you have to think about what else are they getting wrong, and it might not be a subject you're intimately familiar with, but then again, maybe they're not intimately familiar with. So, yeah, that's difficult. But let's talk about the King George and QE2 coming up on Saturday.
Okay.
You don't mind. Well, what happened was the original entries looked like the race of the year. And then reality kind of set in, and O'Brien stood firm behind Love, the four-year-old, and she's running. So he pulled out some of the dozens, and, you know, the race is basically Love against the Epsom Derby winner from Gaddafi and Adyar. And then Mishriff is in there for John Gosden, who won the Saudi Cup, as well as the big turf race in Dubai back in March. So the race is really good. But what it shows, Steve, is right now, knock on wood, Aiden has five monster horses. Now, we got to see Bolshoi Ballet come over and win the Belmont Derby. We got to see Santa Barbara come over and win the Belmont Oaks. His best three-year-old filly is Snowfall, the Deep Impact filly, and we'll see her as the year goes on. She won the Epsom Oaks by 16 and the Irish Oaks by 8.5 lengths. His best three-year-old colt is St. Mark's Basilica, who's won three Group 1s in a row, including the French Derby and the Grand Prix de Paris last time out, and he's just spectacular. And so he's loaded, and obviously Love is the four-year-old. And then Godolphin has the winner of the Epsom Derby, who we're going to see Saturday in the King George, as well as Hurricane Lane, who won the Irish Derby. So Godolphin's loaded with three-year-olds, Aiden's loaded with three-year-olds, and the trump card might be Aiden as the four-year-old Love. The interesting thing with the arc is if Snowfall and Santa Barbara go as three-year-old fillies, they get a massive weight concession that is very difficult for the older horses to overcome. So Aiden will, you know, he's loaded going into the fall, and then he's going to look at, obviously, first Sunday of October, the Ark, then the Breeders' Cup. Perhaps one will go to Australia for the Cox Plate. Hopefully one or two will go on to Hong Kong in December for the big international races. So Aiden's loaded, Godolphin's loaded. We get a nice showdown with Love and Adyar and the King George on Saturday, but setting up a lot of big matchups down the road as he tries to separate these horses and get them, you know, to the fall in best possible shape. So a really good King George coming up on Saturday, and just hopefully we get to see the Love we got to see last year, because she was spectacular last year.
Well, the King George Saturday, the Lake George on Friday.
Wah, wah. There you go. Now, rarely do you hear the word prescient in the same sentence as Dick Powell. But I have talked to you within probably a month of certain habits that the New York testing lab does, and how trainers would get a positive in New York, and then when they would ask for the split sample, which they have every right to have the sample split, and another lab go to test it, very often the testing lab would say, oh, we don't have any left. We used it all up on the first test.
Right.
And Drew Moniker, our friend, jockey agent, now an attorney, has a couple of cases against SUNY Morrisville and Dr. Malin. Well, lo and behold, what happened this week with the Baffert split sample on the urine for Medina Spirit?
Well, and you bring it up, and KHRC is not happy, obviously. And what this seems to be setting up, it's silly to speculate, but you know, you're going to end up, there's going to be a lot of quibbling over, you know, over what was tested, by whom, when, and how. And, you know, we certainly understood what the hope was, based on what, you know, Alan Foreman told us in terms of testing and trying to make a very clear distinction that Siaka just gives me a look like where have I been. The distinction that Automax, that if they can establish that very specifically, that the other ingredients in Automax tested with the betamethasone, I think that's what their lean is going to be in terms of saying, this does qualify as extenuating. And so the quibbling and the concerns over the amount of urine in this case, this is going to end up being, a key legal point.
But it's mind-boggling. This might be the most high-profile drug
not
test
might.
In the history
it is.
Of horse racing. The KHRC said we had sent him an email, and he responded and agreed to only use so much of the sample, and the rest would go back to the KHRC. And then they get this word that, I used it all up, and have a nice day. And it's like, and it's not the first time it's happened. And how that lab, I'll say it, how is that lab accredited to do any drug testing?
Yeah, and these topics have cropped up, in various places, and in most cases, they are, right? Aren't most of them, collegiate associated, laboratories and almost right? Almost all of them are right. Cal Davis University of Florida and
a couple of that one industrial
Cornell.
Labs. I don't know if they have a university affiliation, but yes, usually it is. This used to be Cornell. Now it's SUNY Morrisville. Out in central New York, but it's like how is this even possible? Now, who does it help? Well, I don't know who it helps, but I know it helps the horse racing integrity people because they and USADA who want to regulate and regiment drug testing in America. And hey, guess what? They're right. We need that desperately because we just can't have this kind of stuff happen. And it's just and I have talked about it already, and for this to happen with this amount of scrutiny and exposure on this issue, it's just wow.
Well, and he also had the blood sample damaged on being shipped as well. At every turn here there's been a miscue.
Yes, it's just that, and then you wonder how often does it happen on low profile cases or no profile cases?
Yeah.
And if it's happening on something like this, it says what level of confidence can you have in these labs that are accredited by RMTC? They've gone through a process, and yet you have in New York, especially. Same thing happened over and over again.
Well, we will wait and watch, and we'll see. We'll see where the latest twist and turn. Meanwhile, Dick on the racetrack here, and let's get an early impression. How's your, how was your first few days?
Well, I said before it was going to be slow, and I didn't think it'd be this slow, but it's been slow. I had Rosario on that Cantamarchi turf horse for, $25 yesterday.
I wish I had known that.
He never wins on turf, so that was nice.
Good job.
I did say Louis Saez was going to have a big meet, and he's tied for the lead, so Louis's riding fantastically, and that's great to watch. And yeah, at least now that we got blue skies, we're supposed to have decent weather through the weekend. So at least I'm not handicapping weather while I'm trying to handicap horses. So the courses should be, pretty straightforward, fast, and heading towards firm on the turf.
Should be perfect. In fact, Woodbury Payne came back by Woodbury when I started with Sean. Wood was headed out to inspect the steeplechase course ahead of the Smithwick, and as he came back by, he gave a big thumbs up. The turf has got to be absolutely perfect, and what will happen? We won't get rain for 4 or 5 days, and the next sound you'll hear will be people saying, oh, the turf courses are lightning fast. It's like, well...
Well, one thing with turf courses when they get wet is in the beginning part of the drying out stage, they get pretty speed favored. That the moisture kind of holds the dirt, the soil together. And oftentimes, you're thinking, oh, gee, we got so much rain the other day, it's still going to be soft, and then it's going to favor closes or whatever. Now, the running times might be a little slower than normal, but don't, if you have a horse, front runner, and looks like he's in the right spot, don't worry about the turf course, because I think it's to his benefit to race on a course that's had some rain and is now starting to firm up. But even before it gets to firm, it still might be speed favoring.
Otherwise, though, I haven't heard anybody, Seth, I haven't heard anybody talk bias, anybody talk, you know, obviously, you know, when you have a sloppy track, you know, part of that is not just a question of a bias, but the, you know, when mud is flying, you know, horses take, you know, mud in the face, they don't, you know, they turn their head, they shy back, and, you know, that's what creates the impression that we've got speed favoring surface on wet that contributes. But it seems, you know, seems like we've had a very fair 5 days.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to horses running back. Now, with an 8 week meet, it takes 3-4 weeks to get horses to run back. When we used to have a 4 week meet, you know, they'd be back in the next condition book, which was 2 weeks. So that's, you got to be patient, waiting for horses to show up again. But yeah, it's been good. I've been just taking it easy and picking and poking and stuff like that. And you know, I'm looking forward to the weekend because I'm looking forward to predictable racing surfaces.
You got a play or two today? Anything that grabs you?
I do not, Steve, because I did all my work last night and this morning on Saturday's card.
Oh, okay, I got you.
Which I have to have ready later today, and then I got to start in on Sunday tonight. So today I'll look at when the races begin, then I'll start looking at them. But I didn't do any prep work on today's card.
Fair enough. Well, I'm glad we caught up, and I'm glad you pointed out King George and the action on Saturday. And, of course, we should also mention the wrap-up. We done for the season for Hong Kong, but plenty to keep us busy. And, Dick, I'll see you. I guess Seth said he saw you yesterday. We'll see you maybe over the weekend.
Yeah, I ran into Seth yesterday, yeah.
All right. We will look to see. We'll catch up with you hopefully during the weekend.
Well, how many days are you going to be on track?
I'm going to lean toward these Wednesday, Thursdays, and
okay.
You know, because
right.
Friday is weekend preview, it doesn't make sense. I'm reaching out to people all over the place, and Monday the recap, you know, and nobody here. So I think Wednesday and or Thursday makes the most sense.
Okay, no, I can definitely stop by. That's easy.
We'll get it. Yeah, we'll definitely get a live visit in at some point during the season.
Right. Sounds good.
All right, Dick Powell, everybody, and it is, of course, it is AmWager Thursday at the races, and we'll probably get a chance with Popo too tomorrow when he handicaps a couple of spots with Form to Win. We'll get a couple of AmWager notes in about the interface. We're going to say hello to Seth Merrow, who is sitting across from me, and a much more relaxed environment, Seth, compared to Sunday, where it was a little topsy turvy. We had a unusual Sunday.
Yes, I've heard Rip Van Winkle jokes all week long. So, but I will say it is more relaxed here, and I you know, normally I'm over on our TV set on the backside this time of day, but sitting in here with you, they have quite the soundtrack going. Clash, Aerosmith are playing behind you.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, and just as long as they don't start blaring it at the bottom of the hour. Last Thursday, and of course, I mean, we had a big crowd here, but last Thursday, in fact, the topic came up, I forget who brought it up yesterday or Monday, whenever it was, they were, intercom was absolutely, I mean, just overwhelming. And I, you know, there's a speaker there and a speaker there. Yeah, right, yeah there's three right of them.
Yeah.
There's a row of three of them. But we couldn't really, you know, we were kind of shouting over it. So it was a little tough. We didn't get to do on Sunday. We didn't get to do, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to it. You probably haven't. But some of the things that you and I do in terms of notations and results, one thing I've been tracking, and I said yesterday, I brought it up with Pete because I hadn't brought it up with you, but I've been tracking the pick four and the pick fives. And the pick five is, to me now, become, and I reflected it a little bit in my structure today, disproportionately the bet to play, even, you know, even the early pick five is paying untold multiples of the pick four. The pick four prices, the highest pick four so far in the meet, $440 yesterday, that late pick four, which was actually driven by that winner that Dick just talked about, the Rosario Cantamarsi horse in the seventh. But other than that, the pick four numbers are, they certainly don't justify sizable investments. I mean, if you're going to focus, drill down, $12, $24, $36, okay. But it does feel like our focus should be on the pick fives.
Yeah, I mean, the pick fours will turn around a little bit. There'll be some good ones as we go along. But my colleague over on OTB TV, Brian Otto, has said he gets a group together and they pop a pick five every day, and he has said for a few years, as opposed to the pick four, the pick five, if you can get by one logical, the thing is automatically going to juice up nicely. But then you get a couple of clever opinions in there and it really takes off, and it has become the bet for those type of people over the past, you know, 2-3 years. Just looking at the numbers you put together, people have started to realize that, as you say, it's many, many times the parlay, and so it's become the clever bet for people who like those pick bets, maybe have shied away from the pick six a little bit, and now with that option, the pick four was maybe something they were playing, but now the pick five has become the option for them. So yeah, it's a very attractive bet. If people haven't looked at it, if they are more pick three, pick four, you know, take a look. You may have to be a little more clever with your ticket because you've got one more race in there, but you'll get paid off if you have the right opinion.
Well, like yesterday, I even put a pick six play out, which I typically will wait for carryovers. But yesterday, with Refinity in that maiden 40, Refinity looked, I mean, so obvious. And you basically could use essentially three horses in the flat feature, the ninth. You basically West Willpower, Forza d'Oro, and Highest Honors. We're going to get you through there. I thought that this was a sequence yesterday where, you know, you really had some strong leans. The one that got me was Frontman, was that maiden winner. Non-winners of two lifetime. Yeah, non-winners of two lifetime. And paid $25.20. I mean, that was obviously the key horse to have in the sequence. I used that Fair-Haired Boy, which I also used as the play of the day, and came running a little late. Gaffalione, I thought, left him with a little too much to do. I thought coming out of sprints, he'd be more forwardly placed, but he ended up sitting like seventh early. And
What did the pick six pay yesterday?
$2,500. $2,523. And I put together a $96 ticket, and I wasn't unhappy, but I'm tracking this with intent on a couple of things. Actually, I didn't bring it with me, but I've also brought up and you weren't doing the show on Thursday, so you didn't. I didn't necessarily. I don't know if you've heard it, but I was championing the state bred turf routes.
Right.
And I started to do that research that I promised. And it's gonna absolutely bear out.
You said on Sunday that the races where you're gonna find the value are those state breds on turf going long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And 7-1 so far. At the meet, and 8-1 last year, and I happen to have the winner's book printed from like the last seven seasons, so I'm gonna probably just go back 3 years, so I think that'll be enough. There's about 20 last year. There were 20, and I am including the maidens going long, the state bred maidens, and there's actually quite a few maiden 40s, and there have been six last year. There were six favorites out of 20 races, so 30%, and I think three of them were in the maiden races. So this is who used to do all this. I mean, still does. Mazur.
Yeah.
Jim Mazur's work. He has mined that kind of stuff for a long time. And I was curious actually if last year, comparing last year's condition book, winner's book as they call them, with priors, and the condition book did not appreciably change. There was maybe a few more races run in under certain conditions. Just like, for instance, 2-year-olds were late getting started on the season, so there were less 2-year-old races than you normally would have had, just because the horses they were late getting sold, for God's sake. I mean, in some cases, but. What so far for you? Flesh out, what you've been inning.
The weather has obviously affected everybody, so I haven't deep dived yet. Just because things have changed up with some horses, some races coming off the turf and whatnot, and some of the horses that I liked just weren't making it into the starting gate with that situation. So I haven't played a lot. When I've played, I've done okay. I mean, as far as picks, I'm pretty happy. I'm putting the picks on the website, on the Capital OTB website, over on Equidalia, 19 for 50 with the top picks, so I'm feeling pretty good there. I don't know if I can keep that rolling through the rest of the meet, but so far so good. And as I say, I haven't played a lot, but I've kind of picked my spots. I've tried a couple of pick fours and whatnot, and haven't really had any luck there. Been doing more, hit some nice exactas. The first couple of days, the last race of the day, both of those days, I hit nice exactas that kind of when you want to hit as you're walking out the gate, so you got the money in your pocket and you're ready for the next day. So the first 2 days wound up at things pretty nicely, and it's just great to be back though, to see opening day, the next day, and through the weekend. People are really happy to be here and happy to be back on track, and it's just fun to have the energy back in the building, and have Saratoga back to the way it's supposed to be. So that's been a lot of fun, certainly. And the racing, obviously, has been very good, too, and will continue to be over the next few weeks. But as I say, the weather kind of affected my play. I'm going to ease more into it as we get into this week.
Well, we've got at least three really nice days coming here in a row, and we haven't even had a chance. I haven't even had a chance this morning. Dove right into kind of some recapping from the from both Indiana and Saratoga yesterday, touched on a couple of other little news bits. But then as we look ahead to the weekend, and we will handicap a little bit. I want to get some opinions from you today. The weekend, first order of business we got to talk about is the difficulty it ended up the racing office encountered trying to find foes for Malathat.
Yes.
And a four-horse field, and there's two top horses, Malathat and Clairiere, and then you slip down a little bit to Maracuja, who's nice. I mean, it was second in the Gazelle, and it was basically split the field in the Kentucky Oaks. She makes her return, and then Rudy Brissett is going to put rock, paper, scissors, you know, into the fray here and try to get black type for her, grade one black type. And that's the question, Seth. I mean, I saw where Chuck Simon went through the list of the nominees. And, you know... You got to take a chance in here. Yeah. Even if you know you're not winning, you get black type in a grade one for your mare, your filly. You've enhanced her value tremendously, and that's why it's surprising that at least a fifth and or sixth horse, you know, couldn't be cajoled.
Yeah, the big horse. I'm not taking a thing away from her. 5 for 5 won the Kentucky Oaks, but hasn't been seen since the Kentucky Oaks. You know, working well, and I expect her to run well. So, as I say, I'm not taking anything away. But you have a little something to hang your hat on. Come in, take your shot. Any given racing day, something can happen. And when you know it's going to be a short field to begin with, I'm surprised, as you say, there weren't two or three others who said, yeah, let me go in and see if I can get some grade one black type at Saratoga, so that they wound up with 4, a little bit surprising. Malathat certainly justifiably scared them away, but again, there were some reasons to maybe take a little pop in here. I've always liked Clairiere, so you know, if I was going to play around with picks, I may back up with a little Clairiere in that race as opposed to just singling on Malathat, because I think if you get past Malathat, that may help your ticket a little bit, even though it is only a 4-horse field. But Malathat's clearly the one to beat. But again, if I had a nice horse, I probably would have said, let's take the shot and see if we can get a little grade one black type.
Well, the public may or may not recognize that rock, paper, scissors, three-quarter to Funnyside. You've got Funnyside's sister, Rockside, and rock, paper, scissors by Distorted Humor. That jumped right out at me. Rockside herself, winless. She was the foal that Bell's Good Side had immediately after Funnyside.
Very good, very good.
By personal flag, and she, she's had. It's funny. I've seen her name she's been a good broodmare as well. And so, you know, this does feel like a filly that's moving forward.
Yeah, 3 starts and improving efforts in each one of them, and won the allowance event down at Indiana last time. So again, with a short field, why not take a shot and see if you can get some of that black type? That certainly changes the complexion of the future of the horse already. And with only the 3 starts under her belt moving forward, there's always the possibility that something kooky could happen. The works are looking pretty good, so why not take the pop?
Well, and in fact, I just did the exercise to go and confirm. Rockside absolutely has been productive. She's had Rule. She had Rule going back by Roman Ruler, and she had that nice Matru with Distorted Humor, the full brother of Rock, Paper, Scissors. So. This filly lightly raced and moving in the right direction. We won't see any work tab comments, but you know that win, that big win at Indiana, and then you know turned around and fired a bullet July 11th. Interesting.
Luis Saez scheduled to ride, who is red
good.
Hot at the meet.
Yeah, big time. Big time. So, Malathat, Maracuja for Rob Atrus and Beach Haven, and Rock, Paper, Scissors and Clairiere. The other stake later in the card is the Caress, the nice turf sprint, and frankly that. Surprisingly, it's only 6. So this is obviously going to be the struggle. We got a nice field. We had the big field in the Sanford, which was unusual, as Dave Grenick pointed out. And this is obviously one situation, and it's not unique to Saratoga. This is a problem, you know, really industry wide.
Yeah, going back, you know, it's been developing for years, smaller crop sizes and longer time between races and whatnot. So, as you say, it goes beyond Saratoga. But the Crest, nice little field. You got a field of six, as you say. Robin Sparkles, I think, looks pretty good. Nice little New York bred, eight times in the exact and nine starts, over $250,000 in the bank. Jose Ortiz on board. She looks very good, in good spirits for Al Stahl. Last seen down at Keeneland in April. That was a fourth place finish, but I think the horse is better than that. I think that horse is playable. The horse from the rail, Caravel, certainly coming off the win at Monmouth last time, is a player as well. Good number on that win. So I think it's a field of a half a dozen, but it's going to be a fun competitive field, I think.
Rest of the card, I'm just kind of glancing at, certainly every time she runs, now making a fourth start. Tracy Flick is back for Joe Allen. And it just so happens yesterday on somewhere on Twitter, somebody had actually put a clip up from election.
Oh, I tweeted after the first two starts. I said, Tracy Flick loses two elections because it went up to the stewards booth in the first two starts. I think I may have been playing to a small audience.
Yeah,
on
I know.
That,
that's all right. That's all right. Never don't ever let that hold you back. The you got a 6 furlong 2-year-old male group going as the sixth on Saturday, and it includes a nice mix actually of pedigrees, and going to look forward actually to digging into this. $300,000 Medaglia d'Oro for West Point and Lori Gervais that Dallas Stewart sends out. And got a nice 450 into Mischief for Chad and Peter Brandt. Second time starter, a Violence Volcanic for Cassie. The Chad Brown, Peter Brandt is Watasha. Ian Wilkes, who we saw this morning for the first time so far in the meet, Practical Joke, obviously is going to get watched very closely off of Witt's victory on Saturday. Practical Joke going to get plenty of attention. By the way, there's also, I did notice when we talk about Del Mar and the Del Mar card on Saturday, I saw my first Arrogate spotting for a 2-year-old.
Oh, okay.
On Saturday at Del Mar. So the Saturday card and some of the other quick notes, too, as we, let me get this, because I thought I had plenty of, this is the Saratoga side of the ledger. Where are they hiding? There we go. The cross country is going to include none of the Saratoga Stakes are not involved in the 7th, 8th, and 9th in the cross country. The two stakes come from Woodbine, the Nassau, and the Irish War Cry down at Monmouth, the Jersey Bread Stake on Saturday. But the Nassau, you got a nice field going the mile for fillies and mares, the 4 and ups. Good field, and it includes Fox Hills' Jolie Olympica, who's been moved up to Josie Carroll to run up there. And there's a few nice names that abscond for Eddie Keneally shows up, the Blame Philly. It's a good group in the Nassau.
So. Yeah, and as I understand it, for folks who want to go up, you know, they have limited fans now, but folks can cross the
August
border
8th?
Our way, yeah, early. Coming the other way, they still have a few more weeks.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, because I mentioned that at the beginning of the show, that we're going to be able to start going back up, and I'm looking forward this fall to getting up.
And I will highly recommend it for, well, people in our area anyway, upstate New York. It's a easy drive and really nice tracks. Particularly if you like turf racing, the two nice turf courses, that big main turf course, and it's fun.
Well, we had that. We were there for Teppan.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a riot. That I went up and broadcast the 2-3 days and had a lot of fun. They actually were doing some stuff with Woodbine for the season, so maybe we'll go back and do it again. Out at Del Mar, the Eddie Reed, one of the two features. You got a nice group of seven in there, including the return of United, coming back out of the very disappointing effort in the Whittingham. But Say the Word, speaking of Canada, the Say the Word, the Samson Agave, More Than Ready, for Phil D'Amato. Smooth Like Straight in here coming off the Shoemaker win. Restrained Vengeance coming off the win at Santa Anita as well. Both of the Samsons are in this race. Count Again as well. And then you've also got, you got two. You got the San Clemente, the Mile for three-year-old fillies. And this is a good group, too. Big full field, actually, of a dozen. And I mentioned that maiden race, and that's what I'm looking for. There it is. Seventh race at Del Mar on Saturday. Goes off at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. Clearview Stables has a Clear Sky, the Clear Sky filly out of Just Whistle Dixie. So this is a major start, and to be anxious to see the work tab.
I wish I was laughing opening day at Del Mar when the comments about the stake opening day at Del Mar, the Oceanside, not a split division. How many times is that news?
That's the only,
with that one. With that,
always. It's been actually, it's probably been 3-4 years since they broke, since that happened. But this will be a very watched. You've got a couple other major two-year-olds, I think, coming out of this, potentially, including, how about L&J has got their Tappet filly out of With Honors. Honor It is involved in this as well. 5.5 furlongs, so we're just, just getting started. And who else? I think this might be, for those that listen to Brad Free with us on Friday, opening day, Soul of a Warrior, I think, is the filly that he brought up from George Papa Padromo, if I'm not mistaken. But clearly, Mirasol, the filly by Arrogate out of Just Whistle Dixie, the half to New Year's Day and Mohaman and Enforceable, among others.
So that's what summertime is all about. Yeah. Saratoga, Del Mar, the two-year-olds get launched. Super breeding, live connections, always a lot of fun.
Seth, should also throw in the news. I'm kind of just whistling through everything to kind of cross off some of today's conversation points before we get into the weekend preview tomorrow. Swiss Skydiver. The news yesterday got a big hubbub response. and Ken McPeak knows how to generate the headline. Swiss Skydiver is going to contest the Whitney instead of Sunday Shuvi.
I think it'll be fun. She's got that level of talent. This year.
Does she?
Well, this year it's not as. Maybe.
It's not as certain. Against the likes of Maxfield and company.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Obviously the opportunity is to get a win and you're into the Classic, and then have the opportunity later on to contest. Typically with Keeneland, he likes the spinster, and then he can choose between the, maybe if it all works, they can choose between the Distaff and the Classic at that point.
Certainly you got a horse that's proven to like the course, though. Her race up here last year was spectacular, so I kind of appreciate taking the shot.
It makes for it. Yeah. It's a good, it's good fodder. The one part of it that makes me sort of cringe is when people, you see the comments, oh, they do it in Europe all the time. Actually, they don't. Not on dirt. This is a different animal entirely. Don't compare fillies running against colts in races where they essentially jog for three quarters and then dash for cash. It's not the same thing as the demand on fillies and mares in this context.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's a different scenario over here. Also over there, they don't have the same opportunities they have over here, so sometimes they're kind of forced into it if they want to take their shots at big money and whatnot. So it is a different animal over there.
Well, Let's talk about the different animals that we can cash on today. Seth Merrill, let's give some people there. Might be some people that are making their way right now to the track, and others that are sitting home and are looking forward to playing. How about start wherever you want? We can
maybe take a look at the Lake Pick Four.
All right.
The seventh race, $16,000 conditional claimers, 3/4 mile. I went 6, 9, 8, and 10. Quantitative Breezin for Brad Cox. The race 2 back on the dirt was arguably the best of the career. It was an off-the-turf event. It was for a maiden 40 tag. Came back for a 40 N2L on the turf. Now gets back to the dirt, a reduced rate. 7-2 on the morning line. I think with that scenario of the class relief and getting back to the dirt, I think some of the value may get sucked out of that. But 7-2, I think, is nice there. Traffic Lane has been racing also on the turf most recently, but the two dirt races were pretty good. They were both at 9 furlongs, the most recent dirt races. So the cutback today, the move back to dirt, I think Traffic Lane with Irod Ortiz on board is playable, and My Alluring Lady. This one at 9-2, if you're playing, put that one in your mix. It's a class move I've liked over the years and is productive. This one isn't quite as strong with only the 4 starts so far, but moving out of state bred allowance into an open claimer can be really productive at a price. Now, again, the 9-2 isn't guaranteeing a lot of value here, but I think this one on the class move, My Alluring Lady, is playable in the 7th. It really should be in your mix. 6, 9, 8, and 10.
Interesting. I kind of wavered quite a bit in here, and when it came to my multi-tickets, I ended up really concentrating on the 5, 6, and 9. And Cause to Dream, it feels like kind of the stranger. You know how didn't we talk last week about paying attention to, this is not a Finger Lakes horse by any means, but a horse that, you know, is kind of a recent arrival in New York. And I, you know, Demindra DeJarmet is not, you know, is obviously going to be foreign to a lot of players. Blinkers Go On, and coming off of a bullet and seemingly competitive anyway, and you know, I thought with a little bit of speed, felt like a price option to pick up some pieces late. Brad Cox with that Quantitative Breezin, no surprise on the big drop in here from 14-2 to 16, and you know, Alluring Lady, I struggled with. Yeah, there is that maiden breaker, and this is a big drop, in down to 16. But
given the two finishing positions last time, I would kind of want more than the 9-2. But it's a class move I really like.
Fair enough. Well, speaking of karma moves, to pull from Jim Mazur, any longtime listener knows that one of my favorite things is the triple whammy. Dropping down, cutting back, turf to dirt, and Blinkers Are Going On. Traffic Lane, the 9, 3-1. You get Irad. This is a Rapoli runner that Mike Rapoli has shifted from Todd to Rudy. Might save, I don't know, $15 a day in day rate. There's nothing wrong with Traffic Lane, actually. And you know, stylistically, I'm not sure what exactly Arad is going to do with this one. Has only got the one win. It's a non-two lifetime. But that came, you know, right up on the lead, going 1 1/16 on the grass. And so cutting back here, turf to dirt, a lot of things that I like, and dropping down out of a straight 50 claimer. So the triple whammy for Traffic Lane. And you know, Chloe Rose, Bruce Brown drops from 40 to the lowest level available up here. And Chloe Rose is okay with Castellano. I thought this was a tricky race, but I wanted to confine myself to 3 horses for the pick 5, the pick 6, and the pick 4. So I went 5, 6, 9 as the principals.
Eighth optional claimers, non-winners of two on the grass, a mile and three-eighths for me. I went 5, 1, 8, 2, and 6. Lovely, lucky. You know, master of the obvious here. We get 6-5 on the morning line. Moves out of some stakes company. The stakes race back in January wasn't much, but now comes back at a more proper non-winners of two. So we'll look for the horse to rebound with Jose Ortiz on board. But Birdie Queen, normally I have a complete wait-and-see approach on South American imports. And one of the things I tell people when you're looking at these, look at the, you know, the earnings and the purses to kind of get a class edge or a class definition for a horse like this. And 16 starts has won $26,000, but racing for purses of, you know, $7,000 or less down in Peru. So I'm never quite sure what we have until I see a race. So usually I'll sit on the sidelines. But the horse moves into the Belmont barn, and why not? It was running decently down at down in South America, and we're getting 12-1 on the morning line. So I toss that one in the mix, and Cat's Pajamas for Grand Motion, I think, can be a play or two in the third start of the season off a couple of decent little efforts down in Pimlico and Delaware. This is the time of year where these horses can kind of come in from the Mid-Atlantic and run well up here at Saratoga. That was my Shepherd move for years. Grand Motion's kind of in that same school as well. So 5, 1, 8, 2, and 6 for me.
5, 1, 8, 2, and 6. Well, I did something. I won't call it out of desperation, but I went back and forth on this, and I do not care for these three turn.
Yeah.
Turf events, and they're all pace related, right? Invariably. And how many times do you see a horse kind of lope along in this? And you know, there might be horses that on paper figure to get by, but they don't. And I surprised myself by eventually landing on Legum.
Yeah.
For Niall Seville coming up from Fair Hill. And this is a Gosapper mare that, you know, it hasn't gone this distance, but she has had a steady diet of you know, two-turn turf routes. She gets Luis Saez, and I can sense and see, you know, going back to that Delaware win in September, I could see Louis getting her on an easy lead and nursing it along, and then watch for Saez in that third turn to suddenly burst away. And all of a sudden, everybody's going to get desperate, and they might be hard-pressed reeling her in. You know, you also should note, you know, that she's, you know, she's cleared this condition. So she's in for the 80. She's a three-time winner, and I like that as well. So that was my alternate reality when it came to this eighth race. So I went Legum and Cat's Pajamas primarily. I can't take Lovely Lucky off of that layoff going this distance at 6-5.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
Yeah, and I just was leaning on kind of the class to maybe mitigate the situation off the layoff and whatnot, but certainly that is not one that I would lean on to have as a single on my ticket by any means, so I can't disagree. And I like your top pick. I looked at the same kind of pace scenario there. I just went in different directions, but I think you have a clever idea there, particularly if that morning line holds up.
The ninth is a first level allowance fillies and mares. They're going to go a mile and an eighth. I said this on opening day. We're getting a steady diet of these main track circuits one time around at the old spa.
Yeah, and again, I was kind of master of the obvious here. 3-1A, 6-7. I went Ice Princess on top. Second off, a little bit of a layoff from March until June. But I think on a best effort, this horse belongs. I don't think the horse is a lock, though. I tilted towards it as the most likely winner, but not by much. Played hard, is lightly raced. Tyler Gaffleone. Looking forward to really seeing what Tyler Gaffleone does at this meet. I think he's going to have a good meet. Comes off a win on this horse down at Churchill to break the maiden. That was clearly the best race of the lightly raced four race career so far. So I think this horse is moving in the right direction. Comes out of a maiden breaker that also may have been benefited from the stretch out to two turns. So this horse may appreciate the distance again this afternoon. So played hard. As I say, I have Ice Princess on top. To me, it's very close between these two. Love and Love in the third spot. Has some early speed. Maybe the Catch Me If You Can horse, although it'll played hard, has some speed too, and a couple others maybe out challenging. But Love and Love will certainly be prominent. dominant early, and I think off the past couple of races seems in good form, kind of logical as well. Subsidiary at a price, 12-1 on the morning line, wouldn't argue anybody off of that one taking a pop in the pick place. But 3, 1A, 6, and 7.
You know, Subsidiary is my second choice and is my best value play. I went 3, 7, 6, 1 in the entry, Phil Bauer. And I'm rather than talk about the winner, I think Ice Princess is something of a lock here. And I'm going to single Ice Princess.
Okay.
And I'll explain why in a second. But I do want to mention something about Subsidiary, because I noticed something that struck me. She comes into this without Joel Rosario.
Yeah.
And Rosario rode last time, and I figured, well, gosh, let's see. Who did Rosario, who did Ron Anderson put Subsidiary on? He didn't put Rosario on anybody. The fact is that Luis Rodriguez Castro, is it Castro Rodriguez or Rodriguez Castro? I think it's Rodriguez Castro. I can never remember. He's coming back from that injury that the last week or so at Belmont, right. He got nicked up.
Yeah.
And today's his first ride back. And he's put back aboard. And the notas, I think, are consciously trying to help him get, back and back with a win here. He rides, he exercise rides from the morning. I saw Davey this morning, his agent, actually, now that I think about it. I thought that was notable. That they probably could have gone back to Rosario today, and yet they put the kid back on, hoping to get him, a showcase performance. All of that said, the reality of this race is you've got four horses. This is a rarity. You look at Portilla and Love and Love, Played Hard, and Subsidiary, right? The 5, 6, 7, 8, those are all horses that are going to show speed.
Yeah.
This all is going to just play into Errat Ortiz's hands. How is Ice Princess, who already is formidable, she's also going to get a pace set up. I think she is a real strong lean, actually.
Hasn't had a win since last February.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, I have her on top. I'm right with you. I wasn't as strong on her as you were.
Fair enough. Gets us to a very tricky nightcap.
Maiden, state bred maiden claimers, 5.5 on the grass. I originally had the 7 on top. I believe that's scratched. So I'm now 12-4-2. Went to Stella Mars outside. Joel Rosario in a turf sprint. You can't go wrong there for Ray Handel. Comes out of a break from February to June and ran a pretty good second in a similar event down at Belmont. Should have some fitness off of that and run well today. And again, it's a bonus to have Joel Rosario turf sprinting in the saddle. Tom Morley has Social Whirl, who I think comes in some good form. A little bit of a fade job in the last couple, doesn't give you a lot of confidence, but I think you could make the argument that the last race was the best of the career moving into the claiming ranks, and so we get another situation like that today in Orma in the third spot for Jim Bond. Three starts so far, they've been okay. I think comparatively speaking, they're kind of moving in the right direction, particularly off the last race, to fit nicely with this particular bunch. Once I got down to the third spot, I probably could have pointed to two or three others where I would have had equal confidence, but I'm 12-4-2.
Well, and I'm 12-4. I'm 2-12-4 as well, but also the 8. And I did use the 8 as an A. That's Obla D. Derek Ryan comes in from Jersey, and I mean he's got stalls down at Belmont, but over the years he hasn't. He has struggled to win in New York. No reason to be shy saying that. That race down at Monmouth, that fits with everybody here. She runs back to that maiden 20 open.
Yeah.
And I suppose maiden 20s at Monmouth are about equivalent, maybe even a touch. Yeah, it's probably close. Probably close to New York bred 40s, right? Maiden open company, maiden 20s. It's probably close. Anyway, you get Jose Lascano and Ferran Peterson rode last time. Lascano probably an upgrade. I'm not trying to take a shot at Ferran, but I thought Obladi at 12-1 was very competitive in here, and not the only one. I picked Orma, the Jimmy Bond, and I don't think, I mean, I'd probably come down from that 6-1 a couple of ticks. Stella Mars and Social Whirl, absolutely the logicals, 3-1 and 7-2. But beyond Obladi as an A, the 1 and 3 we should note. You got two firsters in here. Tom Morley has got Path Less Taken. This is a Bellamy Road filly. Morley, 3 for his last 8, debuting in maiden claiming company. And Carlos Martin with Exact Change, the Central Banker filly, he's 2 for his last 6. So you got strong positive ROIs on both firster stats. And I think either one of them, I mean, it's not like anybody in here is so scary. No. That if a firster, you know, comes out running, then I'm going to give you one more horse I used as a B. That's the 11, New York Supreme. This is a bit of a morning glory, a horse that has shown best working, and the clockers love her, and she always seems to fire in the morning. She has to translate it into the afternoons. She's been away a long time, but with some maturity, she's a 4-year-old facing, you know, a lot of 3-year-olds. That's, you know, she's giving 5 pounds away, but there's some things to like, including Ricardo Santana Jr., who can motivate a horse. So.
Yeah, hasn't been seen since last year. So with those bullet workouts underneath, maybe she's improved now as a 4-year-old.
That's a possibility, and you know, just natural improvement from 3-4 might be enough. Yeah. And when she left, you look at her, you know, competitively, she is going to have to improve a handful of lengths. But I can tell you that constitutions, from, you know, as they mature, they improve, and they're their figures, just a natural improvement should make her competitive. So I thought this was a very, I called it treacherous in my write-up.
Yeah. Fastel, the 6-horse, is a little bit playable too at 15-1.
Michelle Nevin's always scary.
Seemed to improve a little bit last time with the going to a sprint on the turf and dropping in for a tag. That was, again, arguably the best race yet. So now cutting back even a little further, and with that one under the belt, can make a case there. It's one of those races. The way you kind of want the day to wind up, so the get-out race gives you a chance to maybe make a little money and have a little fun. Certainly if you have a price and a pick, that'll do it. But even if you're left with that, only this last race, I think you can play around and have a little fun in the 10th today.
I do want to mention my write-up is at the website. Got it up, put it up over there early. I mentioned this morning doing the play of the day, the DePaula play of the day on Capital OTB. You were going to have a couple of strong favorites in the 2 maiden specials, the 5th, that Hope Over Fear for Chad Brown, for Bill Mott, I should say. Mott has got a positive ROI debuting horses a mile and beyond. That is notable. The dam actually is turfy, and that is a positive, and is showing some morning ability, hinting at some talent. Hope Over Fear, 12-1. And so I would be very conscious. Expand the map. Certainly the Clarovich Irish Chad runner looks well prepared, no doubt. There's also Hail 2, we should note. Woods Lane Farm and Tom Albertrani debuting this one. This is out of Dynaire, the Saddler's Joy and family. So plenty of pedigree there. Clement's got a pair. They both seem just okay. Pizza Bianca and I forget the other one. There's a second one on the inside. Bally Bell. They've been working together, and neither of them seem particularly, you know, ripe with talent. And I made my DePaula play this Derry Nain, the 3 in the 6th race, who just does seem, for Clement, to be working, ready to fire, and comes out of a stake-winning, turf-sprinting mare. the Hardspun Mayor Port McGee, the Water of the Lake campaign, and you know, a quality road out of a stake-winning mayor, kind of has it over the rest of this field of statebreds, I think. And you get Rosario.
Yeah, and I will tout that you had the nice lead into your plays of the day where you said how you were going to formulate it, and I think you made the right call in that. Play the day, you can go a lot of different ways. You can go with most likely winner or find some value. And you said mostly you're going to try to find those horses that maybe kind of float under the radar, find something a little bit that maybe it isn't on the page and add some value. You did a great job opening day with a nice price. And I think that's what people like with that whole play the day concept, to find them something that they can come over here and have some fun with.
This may be the only maiden race I use all year, just because this one on paper, it really seemed to stand out. I mean, you don't typically make a firster a best bet ever. It's a dangerous proposition.
I do it all the time.
Well, do you really? All the time?
I don't know all the time, but I have done it frequently. A lot of people don't. I like the two-year-old races up here. I like to look for the breeding. And so I think if you can find something a little bit clever, I will jump in and take the shot as a best bet with those. But I totally get where you're coming. It is a little bit dicier than obviously going with a horse that has more form and some other things to take a look at.
Well, and of course at Saratoga, you've got the famous Harvey Packism, the fastest horse in the world, that Andy has continued the tradition. You know, the horses that show up here, and there's this weeks-long build-up to a debut, and invariably they flop, at 3 to 5 or 4 to 5.
Was that a Harvey Pack, the fastest horse
in the
world?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was a Harveyism.
I am jealous of some, because that has now become, that's a racetrackism.
There you go.
So I'd love to have one of those to my own.
You've got countless. You've got nature nurture. You've got nature nurture. You got parakeet in the cage. What are you talking about? You got all.
Well, I think you know them. I'm not sure they are racetrack.
Everybody knows them. That's my favorite. The parakeet in the cage. I said, do you mean a canary in a coal mine? Yeah, that's it. Canary in a coal mine.
I knew it was
a canary. Parakeet in the cage. We had parakeets when I was a kid.
And I think if you want put a parakeet in a coal mine, that it would work just as well. I just had the whole thing, the whole concept.
But would the police make a song? Would they make a song, Parakeet in the Cage? I don't think so. Canary in a coal mine.
It seems like a toe tapper to me.
Well, it Canary in a Coal Mine is. That's a great song. Seth Merrow, I've got potentially some annoying news for you. I think we're going down to, looks like we're going down to Colonial.
Oh.
For a Sunday, Monday thing.
Oh.
So I don't know yet. I don't think it's going to be this Sunday, because I think we're running, I think Kid Chocolate might get in a race for Sunday. But I think
you've got one running.
Kid Chocolate should run Sunday. No, not a Colonial.
Here. So you won't. Okay.
But we're going to go down to Colonial, and I'm going to broadcast there on a Monday. So either going to be this Monday or next Monday.
All right. Just alert me.
So you may have to have me on Skype for.
Okay. All right. We'll work it out. You can give us a little Colonial rundown. I've never been there. I'd like to go.
It used to be that when we did Loose on the Lead during the year, the rest of the year, you'd have me on the phone.
Yes, absolutely.
But now it's getting so that I'm going to be Loose on the Lead, not even here physically. Not good. Because the last 2 weeks, or two of the last 3 weeks, of course, we'll be at Del Mar and then at Vegas.
Yeah, the NHC, and I was talking to Pete Fornatale yesterday. We were both lamenting, it's Travers weekend this year, and so it makes it tough. I mean, obviously, I can't. You're going out, though, so I'm envious, because it's been great the last 2 or 3 years we've been out there, and so look forward, though, to maybe get back in the schedule.
Next January. Next year.
Hopefully it goes a player. I keep pumping at those qualifiers,
make it happen.
The pre-qualifiers, and then I get in the big one, and the waters get a little deeper, and it's usually the weekend when I'm busy, but I'm pumping. I'm trying.
I see your name on the leaderboard. Yeah. And with that in mind, Tony Black's going to join us here. I do want to mention that there is going to be Whitney Day. Whitney Saturday, there's a $3,000 contest coming up next Saturday, and actually two Saturdays from now, August 7th. The buy-in is $3,000, $2,000 bankroll, $1,000 prize pool, $400 bets on five races, win, play, show, Exacta, Try, Quinella, and Daily Double Pools, and cash payouts through fifth place, two NHC seats for next year, and a $10,000 Belmont Stakes challenge for next year, a seat as well. You can play on track at Saratoga, but if you want to be here and you want to play on track, seating of that front is limited. So get a hold of the team, and Naira Betts obviously online.
Should mention also today, low roller
Thursday.
Yeah, so folks over at the track, it's going to be Thursdays and Sundays over here. I love the low rollers. I just didn't have time the other day. Hopefully today I'll get over to play. But also I'll mention Capital OTV. We've got promotions all meet long. We're doing bankrolls. Patrons are randomly selected, and they get a shot at the bankrolls. And it's been a lot of fun. Give out some free money during the month that folks can then put back through the window. So keep that in mind as well.
Seth Free Money Merrow, as they call him.
Actually, I had a couple of good bankrolls. We were at a bar in Menands doing one of the bankrolls probably about 3 weeks ago. An easy bet in Menands. And had a nice little crowd in there. And end of the day, split up the pot at the end of the day for the bankroll, and everybody walked away with 75 free bucks. So, nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. Well done. Seth, let me get Tony Black in here to finish out the morning.
Sounds good. Appreciate it. And I will alert you, because I'm sure I know, because it's already happened twice already. But as I walk around the facility, it's fun, and I thank everybody who does it. People recognize me from TV. Hey, love the TV and what. But they always mention you. They're always like, Sunday mornings with Bick. Bick's the best. He's the best.
No,
so I will relay that to you and just let you know that people are thinking about you.
Go on. Thanks so much. Seth Merrow, everybody, and Seth and I TV on Sunday. Tony Black is standing by, and Tony probably is waiting for the gate to open, because he and I talked as soon as the DQ happened at Monmouth. I was hearing from Tony, and we kind of went back and forth, and I sent him that video that Ramon Dominguez edited, which is really useful. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Yeah, we went back and forth. In fact, before they crossed the wire, I knew somebody was coming down. I said, if this horse wins, Hot Rod Charlie coming down anyway, and they hadn't even gotten to the wire yet. But yeah, it was an unfortunate occurrence to happen in such a big race, and a race that had a lot of people watching. But Richie Migliore hit the nail right on the head. I listened to him speaking about it the other day. And you can't say anything more than what Richie said. And sometimes, you know, you miscalculate. Sometimes as a rider, you want to put your horse in an advantage position over the competition, especially when one sneaks through on the fence. And in doing so, you know, the rider bringing the horse over, Flavian Pratt, it caused a problem. Also, you know, people really didn't focus on Mandaloon and really cite that he was coming out quite a bit also and contributed to the whole thing. But, you know, it was an unfortunate occurrence. But that's race riding, and that's racing at times. And sometimes you try to ride more than your horse, and at times you ride the other horse, and it's effective. And other times you ride your horse and the competition. You try to take advantage of your competition. You overdo it, or you miscalculate, and this is an example of that. You know, not to keep beating that subject to death, I was so impressed when I listened to Sean Clancy. You know, he's finally at somebody that said, it's not a commissioner that we need a league. And that is it. That hits it right on the head. I mean, we've got an International Racing Commission. We have a National Racing Commission. We need a league. We have to get these racetracks together where they are all on the same page to move the sport forward. You know, and Clancy, when he said it, I thought, this is an explanation of what we need better than anyone that I've heard over the years. And, you know, speaking of jump riders, they have the reputation of hitting the ground a lot. But one thing about it, after listening to Sean Clancy talk, and I'm sure he hit the ground on many occasions, being the jump rider that he was, but hitting the ground hasn't diminished his mental ability at all. He's sharp. I enjoy listening to him speak, and he's a great addition to the program, Steve.
He's the three of them, Sean Clancy, Joe Clancy, and Tom Law, and frankly, it takes three turf riders to replace Steve Askin, and they really, they've each got their own perspective, and they they've got long. Long associations and ties, deep ties to the game, and the thisishorseracing.com/Saratoga special team has really been a nice addition. I'll pass that along to Tony, and you're right, the jump jocks, they do have that reputation, and they've also got that reputation. I don't know if it's because so many of them, come over from Ireland or what it is, but they're also known as being a little wild, and that's part of the jump rider scene.
When I was riding at Delaware Park in the 70s and 80s, and there was the jump riders were staying at the Sheridan. We all stayed at the Sheridan. That was a tough group to keep up with, Jerry Fishback, Brian Hickey. I can't remember all the names, but they were a tough group to keep up with. It just goes with their reputation, and what else can you say? Getting back to that whip, I'm glad that we squared this thing away. When it came to that whip rule in Jersey, there's a New Jersey Racing Commission with this whip rule. There's one thing I have to say about that. It didn't contribute to this incident and the hassle at all. But the other thing I have to say about it is... if you have people monitoring the race that you have confidence in, a racing commission doesn't have to pass a whip rule because you have confidence in the people monitoring, the stewards monitoring the race, and they have the legal right and ability to pull any rider up at any time for any reason that they feel is legitimate or for any reason that they feel that the rider is abusing a horse or doing something that is not beneficial to the forward progress of that horse. And then when I saw the Guild getting involved and they said, well, the whip rule contributed, I thought to myself, Terry makes, they spell whip C-R-O-P. You just spelled it with your explanation as C-R-A-P. It's a lot of crap what Terry makes it saying. Telling it's spelled with an O, not an A.
You got to mention this, too, because there was the New Jersey Racing Commission meeting that Dennis Drazen was kind of trying to push them for, some distinctions to be made, some clarifications to the rule, and they... they're hesitating. They're asking that, that we're not asking, but they sort of responded yesterday to Drazen that they can't make any clarification until there's the hearing that they're going to have, in terms of laying out potential days or a fine to Flavian Pratt, and then that perhaps after that point they'll further clarify. There also hasn't been any formal announcement about the outcome of the hearing they had last Friday with Carlos Montalvo after he used the crop to try to get that horse to correct after blowing the turn. So in the first race a week ago Sunday. And there hasn't been, we haven't seen anything about that either. So, they're not helping by leaving these questions open-ended. And you bring up a great point, Tony, when you say, and this is not limited to the crop conversation, the issues that we're having and we've been having for several years when it comes to the, all the herding that goes on. And there's been repeated calls from veteran riders to say, and I brought it up with you, there's no film patrol anymore. They don't bring the room together and show them and query and say, what were you doing here? Why are you doing that? You got to stop. We're going to start fining you if you're going to create these dangerous herding circumstances. The stewards have been so timid collectively that it contributes to the dangerous riding, and they've got the authority. Use it.
That is exactly my thought. If you have the authority, exert it, use it. You know, if you think that it's something that's going to be controversial and you take a stand, at least you're showing that you're aware of what's going on and you're using your authority to try to create a safer or a better situation. But the Racing Commission stepping in, you want to do something, make sure that the people that have the authority to watch these races are the right people. You want to step in, Racing Commission? Obviously, the only thing you're showing me is you have no confidence. The Racing Commission has no confidence in the people they have monitoring the races. It's actually demeaning to the stewards that are monitoring and the authority that monitors the race to come up with a blanket rule like this whip rule. I mean, you're coming up with a rule that every horse doesn't react the same way. They're not individuals they have different traits, personalities, habits, and sure. Have been broke to the profession of running races sometimes differently. So you don't make a blanket rule when you don't have a rule that really fits every circumstance, and this doesn't fit every circumstance, you know, and we're going to see that the longer you have these rules. What you do have is put people in the steward stand that know what they're looking at, and you don't need a special whip rule. But when you put rules like this in place, all you're saying is, well, we don't have any confidence in these guys in the steward stand, so we got to do something to up their ability to monitor and watch these races and exert their authority. That's BS, you know.
Tony, this is great. I appreciate it. I got to pull up, but we'll check in next week.
All right. Take care, Steve. Thanks for letting me vet.
Well done. Tony Black, everybody, wrapping up a fun Thursday here, second week of the season and our second visit. And we'll do this probably once a week this season. Let's send you out to the race day. Best of luck, everybody. Thanks to Sean Clancy for a wonderful hour. Plus, Dick Powell and Tony and Seth, good luck. Talk to you in the morning. Weekend preview at the races Friday, Sirius XM.
Lord, there goes a Buick 49, black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.